Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
They say curiosity killed the cat. But what happens when curiosity calls something that answers? Tonight's letter comes from a former skeptic, someone who thought demons were nothing more than fantasy and folklore. Just stories passed down to scare kids straight or fuel horror movies. But that changed one summer night. In a garage that should have remained closed, he and three friends didn't take the ritual seriously. They joked about sigils, laughed over incantations. But when the smoke began to twist in unnatural patterns, and one of them collapsed without warning, it was no longer a joke. It was a door. What followed can only be described as possession, or perhaps something worse, a violent break from reality, a vision shared by all four boys that defied logic and has never faded, a moment frozen in memory of a figure wearing the bloodied head of a goat, standing in a place no one should see. Let's get to the letter they write. I don't usually write things like this, honestly. I never thought I'd have a reason to, but I've been listening to your show for a while now, and every time someone says, "This is 100% real," I roll my eyes. So I get it. If you're doing that right now, I don't blame you. But I'm telling you, what happened to me and three of my friends one summer night was real, and it changed everything I thought I knew. We were staying at my friend's house. His name's not important. Call him Harry. It was late July, hot enough that the garage doors stayed open most nights just to let some air through. For about a week, we'd been joking around about summoning something. Not seriously. Not with candles and all that. Just dumb high school stuff. But Harry, he had this weird fascination with old demonology forms. And one night, he printed out a sigil. That's when it stopped being a joke. There were four of us, me, Harry, Chris, and Will, all 17, all restless, all convinced nothing would happen. Each of us had a reason for going along with it. Chris was the good kid, Christian, straight-laced, wanted to prove this stuff was fake. Harry was the opposite, skeptical but angry. Will didn't care. He just thought it was funny. And me? I guess I was somewhere in the middle. I'd lost my religion that year after a pretty rough time at home, and I wanted answers. Any kind. Even the wrong kind. It was close to 3 a.m. when we did it. The garage was mostly cleared out, just a few bikes and a pile of boxes against one wall. Harry drew the sigil in red chalk on the concrete. It was a symbol meant to summon some minor demon that supposedly guarded over thunderstorms. Sounded harmless enough. We lit a black candle and a stick of incense. It smelled like something earthy, wet moss and wood smoke. We sat around the sigil in a circle, cross-legged, knees just barely touching. The moment we started reciting the chant Harry had printed out, something shifted. It wasn't a wind or a sound, just a feeling. The air got heavy. The smoke from the incense didn't drift like normal. It coiled like fingers brushing past our faces. At first, it was almost nice, like being wrapped in warm water. We even laughed a little. Nothing happened. It felt dumb. Then Chris got quiet. He was sitting to my left, and I remember glancing at him between lines of the chant. His eyes were closed. His body was rocking just a little, barely noticeable. I leaned toward him to ask if he was okay, but before I could speak, he collapsed, just slumped forward like a puppet whose strings got cut. At first, we thought he was messing with us, but his face, something about it didn't look right, like it was slack, drained. Harry and I rushed over. Will froze. For a few seconds, everything was chaos, shouting, shaking Chris, trying to wake him. Then, just as fast, he stirred, blinked, sat up, totally fine, confused. He had no idea what had happened, and Harry, trying to cover his own fear, called the whole thing stupid. Said Chris probably just fainted, but I could tell he was shaken. And then he did something reckless. He looked at the sigil and said loud and clear, "Is that all you've got?" I wish he hadn't said that. And we sat back down, but the air wasn't welcoming anymore. It felt cold, but the kind of cold that presses in on your skin too close. We tried to ask questions to the demon, whatever we thought we were talking to. Nothing came back, nothing verbal anyway. It was like my brain stopped listening to the rest of the world. I was aware of my friends, their voices, the candlelight flickering, but all of it felt distant, like I was being pulled inward, farther and farther from the room. My body began shaking, not trembling, shaking. I stared at Harry across the circle, tried to speak, but my tongue didn't work. Then everything snapped. I don't even remember the scream, but they told me about it later. They said it sounded like a pig, high-pitched, guttural, not human. I lunged at Harry, straight across the chalk sigil, hands out, aiming for his throat. Thank God he ducked. I crashed into the ground, shattered the incense burner, and just lay there sobbing. Not from pain, from something else, something I didn't understand. They pulled me outside. We didn't talk. No one knew what to say. I felt raw, hollowed out. But there was one thing we all realized at the same time. The candle was still burning. We hadn't closed the circle. We hadn't dismissed the demon. We had left the door open. We stood outside for what felt like forever, just staring at the side door to the garage. None of us wanted to go back in, not after what happened. Not with the air still so thick, the silence inside so unnatural. But Harry was the one to say it first. We didn't end it. He was right. The candle still burned, the circle was still open. I don't know if that really matters in the way horror movies make it out to, but it mattered to us then. Something primal told us that if we didn't close it, whatever we'd let in would stay. It took all four of us together to even step through the door. We flipped the light switch as we entered, but it didn't come on. The garage was dark, not pitch black. The candle was still flickering in the center of the circle, but everything beyond its light looked wrong. Dimmer than it should have been, like the shadows had weight. Then we saw it. In the far corner of the garage, where the cluttered boxes used to be, stood a figure. It wasn't moving. Just there. At first, it looked like a mannequin or maybe someone playing a sick prank, but as our eyes adjusted, we saw it clearer. The body was that of a man, bare, pale, expressionless, but his head was a goat's head, blood-soaked. The horns curved back and dripped onto his shoulders. It didn't look like a mask. It didn't look fake. It looked like he had been wearing it for too long. Behind him, the wall was gone, replaced by something else. I don't even know how to describe it. It looked like a mountain of flesh, bone, muscle, sinew, like we were looking into something alive and ancient. A place that didn't belong in our world. None of us screamed. Not one of us moved. And then, just as suddenly as it had appeared, it was gone. Harry blew out the candle. That was it. No wind, no slam of a door, just darkness. The light returned to normal. The garage was silent again. But none of us questioned what we saw. Later, when we finally spoke about it, every detail matched, every single one. We'd all seen the same thing. We didn't sleep that night. Every shadow looked like it might stretch into something else. I saw movement where nothing should move. Shapes of animals, humans, flickering just out of reach. Chris kept muttering a prayer under his breath. Will looked like he'd aged 10 years. We stayed in the living room until the sun came up, backs to the wall. The next week, I moved into the dorms with Harry. We never brought it up again, never talked about it to anyone. It's like we made a silent pact not to disturb whatever thread we might still be dangling from. We passed each other in the halls, made small talk, but that night was a locked door behind both our eyes. But here's the thing, Tony. I still don't know what happened. I've gone over it 100 times. Was it some kind of mass hallucination? Trauma response? I want to believe that. I really do. But it felt real. Tangible, like whatever we touched had touched us back. The worst part? I sometimes wonder if that wasn't the end of it. Like maybe the figure we saw, the thing in the garage, didn't just disappear. Maybe it left with us. I haven't touched anything spiritual since then. No candles, no symbols, no circles, just silence. I know people say, I'll never do that again after stories like this. I used to think that was just fear talking. but now I know what real fear feels like. Call me Eli. That's not my real name, but it's close enough. Let's break this down. Psychologically speaking, what happened could fall under the category of group hysteria or shared delusion. In high-stress environments, especially those involving fear, darkness, and ritual, our brains are wired to sync with those around us. We begin to see what others see, feel what others feel. Add in sleep deprivation, elevated cortisol, and the power of belief, and it's not hard to imagine a powerful hallucination. One friend collapses, another dissociates, and a third triggers a full-blown stress response. Trauma can do strange things to memory, and shared trauma even stranger. But then there's the other possibility. So what if they did summon something? In demonology, deception is said to be their greatest weapon. Entities are not obligated to come as requested. They're drawn to weakness, to wounds, to doors left open. Eli and his friends, whether they knew it or not, might have cracked that door just wide enough. And that garage, that simple, ordinary place, it may now carry a scar. We often imagine evil as loud, chaotic, impossible to ignore. But what if it's patient? What if it waits in silence for an invitation? Whether it was a psychological break or a spiritual breach, something answered them that night. And perhaps the most terrifying thing of all is how easy it was to call. Until next time, keep your eyes open, and whatever you do, don't forget to blow out the candle.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.